Hey guys, welcome to Adulting with Autism, the podcast where we dive into the roller coaster of adulthood through a neurodiverse lens. I'm April Ratchford, your friendly occupational therapist mom, proudly on the spectrum and raising an amazing young adult son with autism. Join us as we share stories, tips, and laughs, offering a supportive space for anyone navigating life's twists and turns. Grab your drink of choice, no judgment, and let's embark on this journey together. This is Adulting with Autism. Hey guys, how are you? It's your friendly OT, April, and I want to wish you guys a happy Autism Month. And for those of you out there that are OTs as well, happy Occupational Therapy Month. I find April goes hand in hand with those two, and I'm very proud to be an occupational therapist and very proud to be on the autism spectrum. Even though it was, you know, late diagnosis, better late than never. Now understand I'm not a crazy person. However, this episode goes more for parents and caregivers, or if you like, parental units, because we have a bad habit of people pleasing, and it's only because we want the best for our kids, and you have to set boundaries. You have to set boundaries. I'm still trying to set boundaries. I am a huge people pleaser. You can tell in my work life, I'm a huge people pleaser because today is Wednesday. I've worked 10 days in a row. This is my first day off in 10 days. That is insane and not good for your mental health. You need space just to be you and to commune with your family. But my next guest, Kara Regas, is a coach who can help you set healthy boundaries on people pleasing. Kara is a certified life coach who specializes in helping people with people pleasing behaviors and setting those boundaries. She has been through her fair share of challenges, abuse, divorce, and loss. And with all those things, it made her take a hard look at what kind of person she wanted to be for herself and for her daughter. She understands what it means to depend on others for approval and self-esteem, and as a recovering people pleaser and perfectionist, I want you guys to really sit down and listen and hear what she has to say. Please welcome my guest, Kara Regas.
Hi, Kara.
Hello, April.
How are you?
Am I coming in okay?
You are.
Great. Cool. Same to you.
Okay. I have a world of questions for you.
Excellent. I'm here for it.
So welcome to Adulting with Autism. And for my guest, could you explain what exactly is people pleasing and how did you become a people pleasing coach?
Okay. All right. So people pleasing at the core is when it's a strategy. You could even call it a survival strategy. So let's say that first. It doesn't mean there's something wrong with you. You're not bad if you're people pleasing. It's a strategy that you learn throughout your life, probably when you were a child. And that strategy is when you focus on other people's needs before yours. That's it in a nutshell. And it looks like bending over backwards to help other people, not checking in with yourself if you actually have the capacity or the time, just saying yes every time, being very uncomfortable saying no, and being uncomfortable with direct communication. And that, of course, includes conflict.
So how did you get into the coaching aspect?
Yeah, so I got into the coaching because research is research, as they said in my psychology program. Because I was a people pleaser, right? I'm still very much on the path out. It's a long-term process. It's a practice. It doesn't have an end if that's your strategy. And that was my strategy and still sometimes is. Yeah. So I recognized it in myself and recognized why, grew to understand it. And then noticed that there were a lot of people around me suffering from the same stuff and not even really being able to necessarily put words to it. And not recognizing how it was impacting their lives. So I decided to specialize in it.
So for my parents and caregivers, for like, you know, young adults with autism that they want to get independent, I know a lot of them fall into this category, making sure they do everything for the kid, but forgetting where to set boundaries. Where would you start to kind of realize, am I a people pleaser, and how to kind of establish boundaries?
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is tricky when you have a kid who has additional needs, or different needs, especially if you've had to fight for them, you know, in institutions, at school, in other areas. It's very easy to, even if you weren't a people pleaser, to even take on some of those traits, because as a parent, even a parent of a quote unquote, let's say, a neurotypical kid, even then, it's your job to put their needs ahead of yours, especially when they're much younger. So I'm not surprised that it's an issue that you've noticed. And I think the first thing is being aware of how it looks for you. I've already mentioned a few things that how that can look in terms of not having boundaries. But in this situation, it might look like not noticing that you're still doing something that maybe you don't have to be doing for them anymore. You know, you've gotten into the habit of taking care of that task for them in a way that maybe there's been growth there. Maybe there's been change. The child has grown older, as you said, but you're doing it automatically, like on default. So that's one of the ways that I think we can look at our boundaries is in this particular situation is to say, oh, okay, yeah, how has my child changed? In what ways have I not necessarily adjusted my behavior? And a big red flag that you do need to set a boundary is that you're feeling resentful, that you're feeling angry, and probably really tired, possibly even burned out. So I can't remember exactly what you asked me to start with, but I hope that I got in there a little bit for you.
Yes, because I didn't realize I was a people pleaser until I started like doing some personal growth. And I was like, oh, you mean I can say no?
Yeah. Yeah. Especially with our kids, we get into these patterns, right? Where, you know, it's easier to just say yes. Especially if there's some behavioral things going on there, if we're anticipating a big emotional response and maybe we don't feel like we have the capacity in that moment to deal with that emotional response, we tend to just say, oh, okay, never mind. Fine. Right? Yes. Right. Okay. Yeah. And that's the hardest thing to break. Definitely. That's the hardest cycle to break is to sort of get yourself ready. Pull your power together and say, I'm not going to do it this time.
Now, can kids pick up on their parents' behaviors of people pleasing and just kind of take it on from that way?
I'm not a clinical psychologist, so I don't know exactly there what would be the case. People pleasing is a trait, how I know it to have manifested from my own personal experience. Is developed in an environment, I'll just tell you from mine, because I don't want to say this is for everyone, but I think my example is very common. So for me, it was an environmental situation in my family where I didn't feel like it was okay for me to take up space, for me to express my opinion, for me to basically have needs at all. So in that case, you know, the environment around me was, for me, a little chaotic, kind of volatile. I had two older siblings that were teenagers and there was conflict there and so on. So that's one of the common ways that it develops in kids, because there's a, from their perspective, chaotic environment that they can't handle and they don't want to contribute to it because they're seeing a lot of negative attention being given to other people, in my case. So then the strategy becomes, okay, I'm just going to be small. I'm going to be quiet. I'm not going to, you know, make any waves, and I'm going to focus a lot on the other people around me to make sure that I don't make waves. So that's where that attention outward, that other people's needs first sort of orientation, that's how that starts, right? And then it becomes a pattern without even realizing it. And again, it's a strategy. It was the best that you can do in the moment. So as to how a kid would take that on from a parent, from the way that I understand the dynamic of that to work, I don't see that really happening. If anything, it would be a little bit of the opposite, right? Because then that kid would be learning that their needs are very important. Quite the opposite, actually. Maybe too important, maybe entitled, right?
So how can people check in with themselves to see if their needs are being met first versus them like pleasing other people?
How could they check in with themselves? The first thing that comes to my mind is how are you feeling? As I already said, if there's resentment, if you're feeling constantly irritated, annoyed, maybe if you're hearing yourself say like, well, nobody sees all the hard work I do and I just have to do it all because nobody else will do it, right? The sort of martyr syndrome. If you notice that that's your narrative, both internally and maybe also to other people around you, that's a sign that you need to check in with yourself and ask yourself, how much am I? Because here's the thing about people pleasing. Yes, it's overgiving. Yes, you're not getting your needs met, but also part of it, as I said before, is that you don't know how to assert your needs directly. It doesn't feel safe to do that. So you have to take responsibility. So part of that checking in is recognizing where you're not taking responsibility for yourself, where you're not saying, oh, actually, I need help with this, or, oh, actually, I need space that afternoon. I can't help you with that. Right. So that's the checking in, but it starts with the feeling. How am I feeling? And generally, when am I getting irritated? That's the biggest one. And of course, again, all of that irritation, all of that overdoing, it does lead to a big energy drain. You can be very tired.
So how can people start getting out of this habit, people pleasing? Like, what's the first step? After checking in, you're like, I'm angry every time they ask this. Mm-hmm. I'm tired. What do they need to do first?
Mm. Yeah. Well, I mean, this is where therapy is really useful because I think a core belief, unknown belief, but nonetheless, core feeling among us people pleasers is that my needs are not important. Also, that my identity is that I help other people, right? So I think that the step other than awareness is to also recognize that this goes pretty deep for most of us. It's not a quick fix. It's a therapy thing. I learned a lot of my stuff, you know, unwinding all these habits from therapy. And the identity piece is really important because, as I said, a lot of people pleasers identify as, and they might not say that they're a martyr, but all of the behavior, you know, tends to that, where I'm very helpful. I'm so kind. I'm the most helpful person. So the steps are to be aware, checking in, as you said, recognizing that this isn't just something behavioral. Right. Because if it were behavioral, you would just start speaking up for yourself. But the truth is that it's based on a deeper belief that this is who I am. This is how I have to be. It's my identity. So much so that you might not even really know what you, because you are so out of practice. You might not have been in touch with your needs for, you know, since you were maybe 3 or 4 years old. It's going to be the last time that you were like, oh, I'm hungry. I'm going to go eat. You know, I mean, maybe not that. That's not a good example, but you know what I'm saying. So that's what I would say is it needs to be, you need help from a therapist. Can be a coach like me too. It depends on how deep and complicated it is. And just recognizing that, yes, you can start to change the behaviors, but it needs to go along with an understanding of what's driving them in the first place.
So can you tell people what the difference between using a coach versus using a therapist?
Yeah. So therapy, as I said, goes deeper. Therapy goes into some of that stuff that I was telling you, like that I had to go through. So understanding what happened in the past, looking at family dynamics, the past, all that kind of stuff, that's the realm of therapy. A therapist will also be more in the mode of diagnosis and advice. Coaching is when you've maybe already had some therapy or you've done a lot of your own work to uncover some of those deeper past things, and you have an understanding of the sort of landscape of what you're working with internally, right? And then with coaching, what you can do is start to, you know, talk through scenarios, look at patterns, look at assumptions. So a coach is going to give you the space to start to navigate these things in real life, integrate them. So with the people that I work with, for example, somebody will bring to me a scenario where they're like, oh, I'm really frustrated and I don't know how to get through this. And I'm noticing this and this and this theme come up that I already learned in therapy. And I want to know how I can apply it. That's the realm of coaching.
Oh, so it's mostly like you're in therapy, you know, but you help them apply to their scenarios.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
What's the most common scenario you've heard during your coaching experience that seems to be that number one thing that people have difficulty with?
Knowing what you want and need. It's one thing to understand that, okay, I recognize that I'm a people pleaser, or I have these tendencies and I want to change because I'm tired and angry all the time, right? But getting to that point of, okay, what are my actual opinions? What do I need from moment to moment? How do I like to live? These kinds of questions can be really difficult. And it's a foundational question that has to be answered. And it's also the hardest. It's a process. We're always coming back and asking those questions again.
What tools can people use?
Okay. So tools wise, I like both top down and bottom up tools. I don't know. Are you familiar with when I say top down and bottom up? What that means?
I am. Yeah, I do, because I was a nurse and therapist, but most of my audience probably doesn't. So what is top down?
Okay. So top down is when we work with the mind and the thoughts in order to potentially impact both, you know, thoughts, emotions, behaviors, but also the physical state of the body, right? Because the way that we feel, for example, emotionally has a cascade effect on the body in terms of the state your nervous system is in terms of your hormones, for example, cortisol, adrenaline, all that kind of stuff. So that's top down, and the bottom up is the exact opposite. So we work with the body, with the state of this nervous system to bring it basically into a calmer state at a rudimentary level. And that, of course, makes you feel physically more calm, and that it also allows you to be more in control, to be able to think thoughts that are more empowering, actually. It's quite interesting stuff.
So what are the ways some people can calm down their nervous system? Because I know some people hear that all the time, especially when they're having anxious moments, and they're like, well, how do you calm down a nervous system?
Yeah. There's a lot of talk about this now, and it's wonderful, and it's been simplified. And that's okay. It's good to start from somewhere. So I think the first thing to say is about the nervous system is we have this idea that we need to always calm down. And generally, yeah, there's a lot of times where we feel anxious and we want to calm down. But the real goal is actually to have a flexible nervous system, to be able to go to a more extreme, what we would call sympathetic state, to go down to a parasympathetic state, to go maybe into these other states like that are, for example, the freeze state, or, you know, fight flight is up in sympathetic and so on, or even dorsal, which is like a total shutdown. But the fluidity is what we're looking for, because what a lot of people struggle with is they jump to extremes. They're either all the way up or they're just shut down. So all the way up is like, I can't stop checking my email. Everything feels really urgent. Everyone around me is driving me crazy. I'm fidgeting in my chair. I need to pee a lot. That's like up there. And then, you know, the shutdown is, I feel foggy. I don't really feel anything. I kind of just want to zone out. I move slow. That's that shutdown. So and this is very common that people bounce up and down to the extreme. So the goal, yes, it's to feel calm, but calm and present, not calm and shut down, right? So the goal of all of these things is to get your body actually to get used to being more in that, what I would call middle zone. And in the slang, it's not slang. And the lingo is ventral vagal nervous state. So I forgot your original question. I'm so sorry, April.
That's okay.
There's so much to say about this, as I'm sure you know. So at me if I can.
No, because I've been studying it. Mm-hmm. And it makes perfect sense of regulating your nervous system, because so many of my audience is either super up mm-hmm. or the opposite. And I just needed to, what tools can we get them to be more fluid in their nervous system? Mm-hmm. Like if somebody is calm, but they're shut down and they're just like, how would they bring themselves up?
Yeah. Okay. So there's a wonderful resource out there. Maybe we can even put it in the show notes. It's not mine, but her name is Jessica McGuire. And she has like a nervous system school, and it's for people who want to help themselves and learn these different somatic approaches. And she has some great resources in there that I use for myself. And I now, you know, use variations of with my clients, but they're all based around bringing attention to the physical state and either bringing that activation up or bringing it down. So bringing it down, for example, she has one exercise that she calls the contact points. And it's about bringing attention through your body, different points of contact. So for example, if my arms are on the arms of my chair and I'm feeling a little bit up, like too up, I might notice just the sensation and then see if I can soften the sensation, soften the way that my hand is touching it. It's a bit of a subtle process. And a lot of these exercises are, without a video on, it would be hard to explain them in detail, but I do recommend her. It's Jessica McGuire. She does a really good job explaining all this stuff way better than I can. So it could be a good place to start.
So is that where you typically start with your clients to see where they typically land on their nervous system? Because I know a lot of mental health therapists haven't really caught up with mm-hmm. the research. Mm-hmm. And so working from where they are to kind of learning how to kind of navigate their own nervous system.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it depends person to person. But you know, for example, I started working with one guy, you know, and he had a lot of stuff to tell me. There was a lot of mental, but I just saw him and he was like, you know, like almost electrocuted. I'm like on fire. And so I felt called to give him that information that, you know, your body right now, it is revved up. And he did mention as well that he'd been to the doctor and the doctor was concerned about his health, you know, his heart, for example, and he's a young guy. So there was definitely precedent to this. But yeah, like in that example, I did give him the information and we did go through an exercise together so that he could experience in real time how that impacted the way that he was thinking. Because his thoughts slowed down significantly after that. Like his pace of speaking, his breathing got lower in his stomach and slower. So it really does help. But it's about the individual. I don't start every session doing that. Sometimes it comes later. It just depends.
Now, since you've been coaching, do you feel like you get overwhelmed because I'm like, that's a lot to take on, like people pleasing. You being the person coming from your own journey of people pleasing, mm-hmm. is that draining for you?
It has been in the past. It's different now, fortunately. But there was a time where I was like, gosh, I'm taking on a lot. But part of the training that we get as coaches is to, you know, to learn the difference between empathy and compassion. And this is absolutely key for people pleasers, right? Empathy. So if you imagine that somebody's fallen into a pit and they can't get out, that they're down there in the mud, right? Empathy is jumping down into the pit with them, feeling all the feels with them. And for people pleasers, especially, that's really draining because we're doing that on autopilot. Compassion is you standing outside the pit and getting help for them, right? Maybe that's not a perfect metaphor here for coaching because coaches don't get help for, but we facilitate a process so that they can find help for themselves. But nonetheless, you're not jumping into the pit. So this is one thing that helped me a lot in my coaching and just in my life is to understand that difference. And that's a boundary too, by the way, right? Understanding when you're standing in empathy with someone, when you're standing in compassion, how does that feel on like almost a physical level, right? How can I tell when I'm one place or another place? It takes practice.
What reading suggestion would you give people that want to kind of dive into their own journey?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So probably you've read it along with the rest of the world at this point, but my whole journey with this started in the book, The Body Keeps the Score. Additionally, and I hope you put these in the show notes because I think it'll be hard otherwise. So The Body Keeps the Score, Bessel van der Kolk. Everybody knows that book, I think, at this point. Everybody who talks about the stuff I'm talking about right now. The next book I would recommend is Waking the Tiger by Peter Levine. Now, that's the somatic approach. He actually developed a technique called somatic experiencing, and it's excellent for this kind of stuff. So Peter Levine's, he has two books, but Waking the Tiger is the first, the basic one. And then I would recommend a book that I'm actually reading right now, which is called Nonviolent Communication by Marshall Rosenberg. And this one is really interesting because it helps you as a people pleaser take accountability for what belongs to you. So instead of blaming other people for taking from you, it shows you how you can take an active role in getting your needs met in a way that doesn't lead to conflict, which is great because us people pleasers hate conflict. So I also really recommend that book. I think those are great places to start.
Now, what are the ages that you coach? Are you like 18 and over? Do you do all ages?
I do right now just adults. The youngest person I coached was 20. And we had a wonderful time, actually. Yeah, that was really fun. But for the most part, I'm coaching adults.
And if people wanted to have any of your coaching sessions, could they be remote? Do they have to be in person?
Oh, they're all remote. I'm located in the Czech Republic. So I coach all over the world. Mauritius, South Africa, India, Sweden, obviously the States, because I'm originally from Michigan, but yeah, all over the world.
Mm-hmm. And what's your website? And I will put that in the show notes as well.
Oh, it's easy. It's just myname.com. So it's KaraRegas.com.
And what is your favorite thing about being a people pleaser coach?
Favorite thing? I'm going to say my favorite thing is seeing my clients be relieved that their experience is understood. That's, I think, a really important thing that I offer because I have so been there. I'm still sometimes there. And just to know that they're not alone and that somebody else understands this and somebody who can offer them the space that's trained to offer them the space. I think that's the most rewarding thing about doing the work that I do.
And I know there are some in my audience that may say, well, I just heard like a bunch of women have this issue.
Uh-huh.
But because my son would be one of those misreading all the information. So men can also be people pleasers, because I know women tend to check in with themselves more. Mm-hmm. Men, not so much. Mm-hmm. So how can men really sit down and realize, I might be a people pleaser? Because, you know, they're by training taught, you always say yes, you go, go, go.
Mm-hmm. I think, and I don't have the statistics on this, I do think that it is more common in women. And there's a really good reason for that. Women are almost by default socialized to be people pleasers. It's so common. It's crazy in that sense. That's just being a woman is being a people pleaser by some standards in terms of like a traditional sense. But yeah, I think in guys, the guys that I know who have identified it in themselves, they say that it's like that I'm the nice guy, right? Being the nice guy. If I think that for guys, that's a really good phrase because it's sort of known and understood what it means and it encompasses everything. So they can ask themselves, like, do I identify with being the nice guy? Am I the Johnny on the spot? Am I always there for, you know, is that who I am? Is that how I show up in the world? Then usually it's when you know, you know.
That's a good analogy that I would have never thought about, the nice guy. Because it seems like most men, they're like, they understand what that means.
Mm-hmm.
Versus then checking in with yourself. They're like.
And you know, there's even a book that I personally haven't read, but a good friend of mine who's also, you know, very informed about all this stuff, he did read it. I think it's called No More Mr. Nice Guy. And it's about these traits as they show up in men. So it could be interesting for any of your listeners who are. You're looking for that.
Kara, I want to thank you for coming on to my podcast.
I'm so happy that you asked me. This has been wonderful.
Because when I saw it, I was like, oh, this would be great, because a lot of parents and people don't realize they're people pleasers with their children and trying to separate that to make them adults.
Yeah.
They feel guilty.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's about having your own identity. And that's hard. It's hard for all parents. But if your kid's got something spicy going on, then yeah, of course, that becomes your identity. So I really hope that this information was helpful to your audience. And there's a lot to say here, but at least this was a start, huh?
It's a conversation, and hopefully, you know, I'll get feedback on more questions and I can have you on again. And so we can dive deeper into this, because this is like a new thing for a lot of people that's like a new word for now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. Like in some areas, I'm so plugged into the community, like that touches all these sort of topics. So I think of it as being a known thing, but then I recognize that I'm in a bit of an echo chamber, you know, professionally, because I'm always engaging with this stuff. So I'd be really curious what the questions are. I don't know if you have an Instagram. I didn't check.
I do. It's called adulting_autism. And then people can just go under my Instagram regularly as April Ratchford.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because I don't know why I have two, but I just have two to go back and forth, just, you know, specifically for questions.
Right. Yeah.
Then I have a lot of colleagues that are OTs that my regular Instagram that may know something that I don't.
Nice. Well, I was just thinking it could be fun if you feel like your audience is, you know, engaged enough to do a live together where we could sort of feel these kinds of questions in real time.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
I'd keep that in mind.
Something like that. Yeah.
That would be great.
Together, you know, you got my number. So feel free to reach out.
All right. Thank you so much, Kara.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I'll talk to you again.
All right. Talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
As we wrap up another awesome episode of Adulting with Autism, just remember, we're all in this together. Keep being your amazing self, celebrating wins big and small, and facing whatever life throws your way with a smile. Thanks for tuning in, and until next time, stay awesome and keep shining bright. Oh, and if you want to help our podcast grow, don't forget to share it with your friends, leave us a review, and hit that subscribe button. This is April Ratchford signing off from Adulting with Autism.